Welcome into the Ether, a podcast brought to you by ETHUB, the essential source for Ethereum information. Into the Ether features talks with prominent guests in the community, as well as weekly recaps of the ETHUB newsletter. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHUB weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we are discussing the news from September 23rd to September 29th. Hey, Anthony, you want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric, sure. So just a couple of things before we dive into the news. So it's DevCon next week. Yay! Finally, it's been a little while of a wait for both of us. We've been pretty excited to get there. This will actually be my first DevCon, so I'm extra excited. And in Japan, which is even better because I've always wanted to go to Japan. So yeah, just a heads up to everyone, there won't be a weekly recap podcast next week as Eric and I will be in Japan, but there will still be a newsletter for you to consume. So look forward to that.
I'm super excited. Just one thing to add to that too, we'll also be skipping the guest episode, but we have a lot of stuff after that. And I guess anybody that wants to, a couple of people have reached out to me on Telegram or Twitter or whatever, but anybody that, you know, wants to say hi or meet up and chat just about ETHUB or, you know, people we haven't met in person or whatnot, just reach out to us on Twitter. And I'm definitely excited to kind of meet everybody in face that I haven't so far.
Yeah, same here. That's like, I guess, the highlight of these conferences for me, just meeting all the listeners, meeting all the readers of the newsletter, meeting everyone who supports ETHUB and just, you know, people in the Ethereum community in general. It's just a great way to you know, mingle with people that I usually only talk to on Twitter. So yeah. And also, I just wanted to mention about Gitcoin grants. So they've been running a program that was matching grants for the last few weeks, and it was due to finish up today, I think, but it's been extended for another day or so. So if you haven't donated to a Gitcoin grants project yet, definitely go and do that because the matching is actually quite insane. Like, for example, a one DAI match for some projects can be multiplied up to 200 times. So that project will get 200 DAI from the matching. And so the matching funds are coming from Consensus and the Ethereum Foundation as well. So kudos to them for, you know, putting their money up for this sort of stuff, for funding Ethereum open source development. And we've seen a lot of people on Twitter over the last few days get involved, which is really cool. And, you know, gas prices are quite cheap at the moment. Like the Fairwind Ponzi game isn't, you know, the contract got drained, so that hasn't been taking up any block space anymore. So yeah, there's really no excuse not to go give a few DAI to your different projects that you'd like and, you know, have that amplified to be worth a lot more than just the one DAI that you gave them.
Yeah, this is really cool. I mean, this is Gitcoin's third round of doing the grants now. And like last round, I'm sure everybody remembers, like we kind of led that Gitcoin torch effort where we, you know, we're raising funds and like matching people and adding to that pool. But, you know, Consensus and the Ethereum Foundation, I think have put in $100,000 to this. I can't remember if it's 100,000 each or 100,000 total. But anyways, you know, the matching mechanism is interesting. It's called like CLR matching. And the concept comes from a paper that Vitalik and a few other people had wrote. And like what idea doesn't come from a paper written by Vitalik, right? Like it's insane how many ideas do come from there. But the concept's neat. Like instead of just, you know, if someone gave a $1,000 donation, and that $1,000 donation being matched versus like five people giving five DAI donation and only $25 being matched there, it kind of spreads it out based on the number of donations. It's like a combo of how many you got in the total. So like just because one project got one really big donation doesn't mean they're going to get the most match. So it's an interesting concept. And I think Vitalik's really passionate about this. And obviously the Gitcoin team is too. And they're getting a lot of momentum behind this. Like, there's been a lot of donations happening. So I think we have 154 contributions last I looked by like 100 people or something like that. And I think we're second on the leaderboard. We're currently set up to receive like 14 or 15,000 DAI and matching, which is incredible. So huge shout out to, you know, everybody that listens and follows us and has given donations to us.
Yeah, it's kind of blown me away, actually, when I checked that the other day for the first time. I was like, holy crap, this is insane. You know, so we'd love to, you know, extend the thank you to everyone who's donated to us. A lot of the funds will be going towards funding bounties for the ETHUB site to get more documentation on there, to clean up a few things. There's a lot changing with ETH2 at the moment and, you know, the phase one and phase two and a lot of research and development around there that we kind of want to document. So after DevCon, we're going to be putting out a bunch of bounties. So if you're interested in working on those things, keep an eye out on our Twitter where we'll just tweet out the, you know, that the bounty's live on Gitcoin and you can go fulfill it. And yeah, so earn some money working on ETHUB. All right, jumping into the news now. So a bit of, I guess, Ethereum unrelated news, but it kind of is related to Ethereum, but I'll explain why. So this week, there was a bit of Kik drama. So Kik, the messaging app that did an ICO on Ethereum for their KIN token back in, I think it was either 2017 or 2018, but it was one of the biggest ICOs. And, you know, even at the time, people were calling it out as just useless and, you know, borderline scam and whatever. But, you know, there was a bit of drama this week, actually, because there was a hoax that happened, and Coindesk kind of fell for this hoax where a fake account kind of messaged them pretending to be the CEO of Kik, and basically, you know, acted like they were melting down and that, you know, they should have done the ICO, blah, 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 blah. It was a bunch of rhetoric said by this fake person. And then unfortunately, Coindesk kind of fell for this and they published a story as if it was actually the CEO. And a funny thing was that the CEO was on the was on a plane at the time, so he couldn't even respond to this sort of stuff. But then by the time he had landed, it was figured out that it was a hoax. So Coindesk kind of retracted the story, which was kind of a big deal as well, because they haven't done that, you know, to that full extent previously, as far as I know. But then I guess I think it was either before or just after it was announced that the Kik messaging app is actually being shut down, so they can focus 100% on their KIN cryptocurrency, which they also claim to be like the most used crypto in the world, which is just like not right at all. I mean, it's completely incorrect. It's just, yeah, I mean, this is really weird. I personally always looked at Kik and KIN as kind of very shady. I didn't really know what they were trying to do or what they were what would actually materialize for them with regards to this. I don't know why the token would ever be used. Like, I get that there was all these benefits. There's supposed to be like bonus points in the app and like let you buy different things and stuff like that. But it didn't make much sense. To me, it felt like, I mean, I'm not the only one with this opinion. There's a lot of people with this opinion, but it felt like they did the ICO so that the early investors in Kik could exit through, you know, some tokens or whatever. So I definitely think that might have been a big reason as to why they did it. And now, of course, they're stuck in the hell where they actually have to, you know, make the token useful and try to make it valuable to please the retail investors that they sold the token to.
Yeah, this has been shady from the start. I guess going back, I think they raised like 98, almost 100 million in their ICO for this. Obviously, it was kind of during the ICO craze, and it always kind of stunk because, well, I remember using Kik like years ago, like when it first launched. It was one of like the original like iOS messaging platforms, right? And it very quickly kind of became irrelevant, right? As like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger and all the more legit competitors kind of popped up. So when I saw this ICO, you know, what, 2 years ago now, I was kind of like, wait, Kik still exists? Like, where did this come from? And then at the time, I agree with you, like, who knows what their goal was, but it kind of seemed like a desperate play for a dying company, right? I think their user base was dwindling. I'm sure their investor base was struggling with that. And it was like, how do we kind of, you know, bring some money in and kickstart this thing? And this was what they chose to do. The token's always been, I've never quite understood it. I mean, it's basically just like a payment token. So the whole time, like, why not just use EtherDAI for this, right? It's literally just a token that they were trying to like give value to on the platform for people to pay like community members and send money back and forth. So there's just no reason in that case for a token, right? You should just use the native crypto or DAI or USDC or anything that's kind of on the platform when it comes to that. And then, you know, that, yeah, the CEO and all this has done some shady stuff, but it's very interesting on the Coindesk side. I mean, they basically got like, I guess I would almost put like catfished into the story by a troll that was acting like he was the drunk CEO. And there was fallout from it too. I don't know, you know, if this was the sole reason or not, but their editor got fired or let go or whatever, like a day after this. So who knows if that was already going to happen and this just kind of accelerated or whatnot. But there was definitely some fallout around like the crypto journalism space. You know, they published the article and they had to retract it, which, you know, isn't that uncommon of a thing, I guess, in the journalism space. But you know, a lot of interesting things happening at CoinDesk, with DCG seems to be taking a bit more of a stranglehold on them. I think they're moving into their offices or something like that. They're firing their editor. And, you know, it's not unknown that I'm not a fan of Barry Silbert and kind of his past actions against Ethereum with Ether Classic, and just think there's some slimy practices going on there. But hopefully CoinDesk can kind of turn around. I feel like they've had a rough year or two. I think the block's kind of eating their lunch and stuff, and this story definitely didn't help. But yeah, it sounds like, you know, the Kick Kin thing is pretty much dead in the water at this point.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure, you know, how they kind of come back from this, especially shutting down the messaging app, which was, I guess, one of their probably their only useful product from what I've seen. I never used it myself, but I mean, like, I don't really see how the Kin crypto is going to be useful at all, especially because, like, we've spoken about it on the past, or I've included it in the newsletter. There was a whole bunch of SEC drama as well about how, you know, Kins could probably be a security and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's just like a mess. There's never a day without drama in crypto, and Kick seems to be, you know, the beneficiary of a lot of that drama. All right, moving on to project updates for the week now. So first thing I just wanted to mention is the Istanbul testnets are going live. So Istanbul is the next Ethereum network upgrade for Ethereum 1. So this doesn't have anything to do with Ethereum 2. But this has been, I guess, like in development, or research and development, for quite a while now. It's going to bring a host of upgrades to the Ethereum mainnet, the biggest of which is actually reducing the gas cost for, I think, like, I'm not sure what the exact EIP is called, but it actually makes doing, I think, private transactions on Ethereum a lot cheaper. So Starkware is pretty excited about this for their zero knowledge tech. It's going to make it on the order of magnitude, like, very, very much cheaper. I'm not exactly sure how much cheaper, but it's pretty cheap. So definitely looking forward to that going live, so we can see more of this privacy tech get deployed. And you know, there's a lot of scaling that can come from this tech as well. Like Starkware is doing good work there with their Stark DEX, which is plans to scale centralized exchanges on the Ethereum mainnet using this technology. So yeah, really cool to see that. But yeah, there was a bit of an issue with deploying Istanbul to the Robston testnet. I think I saw that it was because one of the large miners on the testnet didn't run the Istanbul fork. So it was kind of like resulted in the chain kind of becoming unstable, but it was quickly fixed, I think, from what I saw. And, you know, this is exactly what testnets are for, right? Finding these sorts of things with the upgrade, even though I don't think it was with the upgrade itself, it was more with just how the testnets run and how it's only, like, I don't know, probably only a few miners on there that keep it alive, since there's no, you know, economic incentive to do so. But yeah, so the rest of the test nets should get the upgrade over the next few weeks. I think the last one goes live on like the 30th of October. So yeah, if the test nets go well, then we'll have a mainnet release maybe, I don't know, November, December. But yeah, I'm not sure. The date just got pushed back a little bit, I think, recently. But yeah, I haven't seen the latest date. I'm not sure if you have, Eric.
Yeah, to be honest, I've kind of lost track. I think it's sometime in November. Don't quote me on that. But hopefully, you know, it seems like things are going smooth so far. Of course, Constantinople last time, the last fork, we got like within a few hours of the fork, and there was a vulnerability discovered in one of the EIPs, or some risk involved in one of the EIPs, and kind of delayed it 6 weeks. So hopefully we don't get to that. It would be nice to kind of have a smooth, like, quiet fork, right? Like, a couple of those happened way back in the day, but it feels like the last one or two have been very noisy, or like something goes wrong near the end. So it'd be nice to kind of usher in a fork that no one really has to talk about, right? Or I guess yes, this is technically an upgrade. I think we've had this conversation before on the podcast back when we were talking about Constantinople. But even though it's a network fork, it's an upgrade because there's no contention in this, and like there's really no reason, you know, besides just apathy or forgetting, that you would want to run the current chain once the fork block hits. So yeah, like you said, there's pretty, I guess I would put it like technical EIPs in this, a bunch of them, but like you said, cheaper for some of the privacy stuff that people are working on. And then also one of the EIPs is kind of like doing some recalibration on gas pricing for certain opcodes. Like, I guess they kind of did an analysis on, you know, how, I think it's on state size, or like how much, you know, an opcode actually uses of a CPU versus how much it's actually priced in the protocol. And the Geth team did some work around repricing those. So I believe that EIP is going into this, if I remember correctly. But that'll be interesting to see go in and kind of see like the shift in gas price versus block size and all that good stuff. But yeah, it seems we're on track, and I'm sure this will kind of start becoming a more talked about topic after DEF CON, as it always does as we approach, you know, the fork deadline.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. Obviously, I hope that the mainnet launch goes well. I think it will. I don't think there's any, contention around this. There were a couple of things that I saw from, I think, Kyber and Aragon about how it would break some of their smart contracts, this upgrade. But I think from what I've saw, it was because they hard coded the gas limits into their smart contracts. So one of the opcodes changes this, which means that it would break the contract. And yeah, so I don't think there's any like major contention around this from what I've seen at all. It's nothing like ProgPal, of course.
Yeah, that'll obviously be the next interesting thing, right? Like, there's no like rewards discussion, drop discussion going on, and everyone's kind of focused on ETH2, but the ProgPal thing is obviously what could throw a wrench in the next fork. I mean, I hope they just drop it, but if they do decide to go ahead with it, it absolutely needs to be its own EIP. I don't like this like bundling with other beneficial EIPs, because that's just going to cause way more confusion.
Yeah, exactly. It's like trying to bundle something like into a bill when you put it in forward to Congress. That I've heard that this is what happens a lot of the time, is that the unpopular things get bundled into a bill that they know is, you know, has a high chance of passing, so that unpopular thing gets passed as well. All right, moving on to probably the most interesting, I guess, news project update from the week that came out just as I was putting the newsletter out, actually. So Coinbase announced this crypto ratings council. Like, I'm sure everyone's heard of it by now and seen everyone have their hot take on Twitter about it. But basically, it's a council to rate, how much of a security a token is. Now, it's really weird because it includes like a bunch of just ecosystem projects, from exchanges to like custody providers in crypto. Coinbase leading the charge, I think, on it with a few other big players. But yeah, I had a look myself, and the rating is actually really weird. I didn't really agree with a lot of the ratings and a lot of what the criteria was for these sorts of things, and like why it would be a security and, you know, why it wouldn't be. Like, for example, I saw that EOS, underneath EOS, it said that there was an absence of marketing for their ICO. And I was like, what? They put up a billboard in New York City with, you know, at the time of the ICO, encouraging people to check out EOS. So, I mean, I felt that was really weird. And of course, today, like this happened after the newsletter went out, but today is actually SEC actually settled with EOS for a $24 million fine, which was just insane to me, because it's like they just got away with issuing like the biggest unregistered security of all time. But I mean, we won't touch on that for now. But yeah, so and the scoring in general is just like really all over the place. Like Ethereum gets a 2 and Algorand gets a 2. It's like, what? Like, they're not even in the same league. I mean, Algorand just had their sale, which was like one of the dodgiest sales of all time for tokens, considering that there was no vesting schedules from what I know, which means that the early investors could just dump as soon as it went onto market and crash the price, which is exactly what happened. But yeah, there was just a bunch of things on there that I thought was just really funny. And in general, from what I saw on Twitter, was people were just like, is this just a way for exchanges to justify the tokens that they list? And then later when the SEC comes knocking or something, they can say, oh, but look, we rated it based on this. And, you know, our rating showed that this isn't a security, or it's, or it is a security. And that's why we didn't list it for certain jurisdictions. So yeah, really, really odd thing. It just feels, I don't know, crypto rating council sounds very weird to me as well. It just feels like a group of, like the Jedi Council, where there's a bunch of powerful people and powerful, companies dictating where they think that these tokens should go, or what they should be classified as.
Yeah, I saw this morning when I woke up, and I thought it was like a parody. Like, it almost reads like it would be a Saturday Night Live skit, or like a parody article on The Onion or something. Like, you know, first crypto rating council, like you said, just sounds ridiculous. And like on their blog post behind like the logo, it's like, it's almost like it's the Supreme Court pillars or something like that. And then, yeah, like all the exchanges are just appointing themselves as this council, but like, the exchanges are the ones that should be worried about like security. So like, why are they judging this just to make themselves feel good? And then like the list is like hilarious. Like, why is Decentraland on there? Like, this just makes no sense. Like, there's so many random ones. And like, why is Hashgraph at 3.75? So the closer you're to five, the worse. So if you're five, they think you're security. If you're one, they think you're not. I think the only ones are like Bitcoin and Litecoin. But then like Hashgraph's like a 3.75 and Algorand's like a 2, and like every one of these just has like 3 bullets. Like, I feel like some random person just was like, okay, here are the first, you know, 12 we're gonna pick, and they just sent around like a 5 question survey to all the exchanges, and then that's like what they put out. Like, it's almost like I could have put this site together in like 5 minutes. Like, it's the most ridiculous thing. And I agree with you. I laughed at Algorand. Like, Algorand the same as Ether. And like, the bullet points are so funny. Like, they're basically the exact same as Ether's. Like, decentralized development efforts, absence of investment-like language. And then, yeah, they're BS about their sale. But yeah, I don't really get it. I guess interesting that they would put DAI at a 1, which makes sense because it's pegged to the US dollar, but I believe Maker has the highest 4.5, like Maker Polymath. And they said for Maker, usage of security like language, marketing of the token, and burning features. So like, all the language is just reused everywhere. I don't really remember Maker marketing. Like, I feel like Maker tried to keep their ICO as quiet as like anybody in the entire crypto space, if I remember correctly. Like, it was pretty quiet, like under the radar. I don't think they even listed it on like any exchanges and stuff. So it's amazing to me that they would say that Maker marketed it, but like Algorand didn't, for example. And maybe the funniest on the entire page, I feel like I could talk about this for hours. Maybe the funniest on the entire page is Chainlink, which has the most obvious shill marketing campaigns ever. Like, if I say one thing about Chainlink, I have 10 people responding to me, and it says on their absence of investment like language or marketing. Like, that's just hilarious. So I don't know. I feel like this has just already become a joke and people were taking it as that. And I remember, you know, back in 2018, there was some rating agency, and the name's now slipping my mind, Weiss Ratings, and they would like come out and rate their cryptos, and it was just as funny as this. So I think we could go without rating consoles and you know, ratings agencies. I think we could do without those.
Yeah, it's just super weird, all around. But I actually do think they kind of got it right with MKR. Like, MKR is obviously a security. It has a lot of different security-like properties. You know, maybe it wasn't sold as such at, I mean, their ICO, I don't even know if they really had like a, what we would consider a real ICO. But in terms of like the mechanics of the token themselves, with like the buyback and the burning, I mean, the protocol burning and things like that, you know, profit sharing. I mean, they're all very common characteristics of what a security is. So I don't think that they got it wrong with MKR. And, you know, Bitcoin and Litecoin. I mean, Bitcoin obviously isn't a security. Like, in my mind, I don't see a world where it can be. Litecoin, they also had a note there saying the absence of marketing as well. I mean, yes, I guess because it wasn't an ICO or anything, but for those who don't know, and you know, Charlie Lee used to actually just constantly shill Litecoin on the BTC exchange back when it first came out. Like, this was really early, like I think 2012, 2013, he'd sit in the troll box and basically tell people to buy Litecoin. Now, you know, does that mean that Litecoin's a security because the creator was in there telling people to buy it? I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about it to say yes or no, but it just seems like that's very, you know, shady to me. And then, you know, of course, there's also the conflict of interest in my mind, where Litecoin was listed on Coinbase and Charlie Lee was working at Coinbase prior to it being listed. So, and he kind of left. I think he left because, you know, he knew Litecoin was going to get listed if he left the company. And then, you know, shortly after that, I think the Litecoin, you know, it had a deeper liquidity because of Coinbase. Charlie Lee then just dumped his Litecoin on Coinbase. So yeah, it's when you think about it like that, I mean, yeah, I don't know enough about securities law to comment on either thing, but you know, it's just, I think Bitcoin deserves its one. I think MKR deserves its, I guess, you know, 4.5, I think it was, or something. But the rest of them are just like, I think they just put something in a hat and drew it out and was like, okay, now we're just going to attach this score to this, and these are the justifications for it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. Like, each one got 4 criteria, and there were, you know, 10 people that voted on each, and it just kind of fell out. Like, there's not enough variety amongst the numbers or like comments to really fully understand what's going on there. But yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not that interested to see where this goes. Like, I guess they're going to put out new, they're going to put out like new ratings every month or something like that. Anyways, yeah, I guess, well, just hilarious that the exchanges are the ones putting this out.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll list the token or put a rating out just before they list the token saying, oh, this is why we can list it because it's not like a security. And yeah, I don't know. It just feels so self-serving. All right, moving on to the last update. So this was really cool because I'm a big gamer. I know Eric used to be a big gamer as well back in the day, I guess, before crypto. Same with me, really. Like, I don't really play many games anymore thanks to crypto. But basically, the Ethereum-based, I guess, game called Gods Unchained. Like, I'm sure many people have heard of it, but their parent company, Immutable, raised $15 million this week from leading investors, which is really, really awesome to see. It just kind of validates that, you know, crypto gaming, blockchain gaming is like this big thing that's going to get even bigger and that's going to grow and that actually has value. Now, Gods Unchained is really cool because they don't have the game on the blockchain itself. They just have the cards on the blockchain. So it's a trading card based game like others like Magic the Gathering and Hearthstone and things like that, if you haven't heard of the game before. But basically, they let you buy cards from them with ETH, because we all know that ETH is money, of course. And then these cards actually live on the Ethereum blockchain, and you can't trade them yet. I think trading goes live very soon. But yeah, the idea is that you can trade them. I think you can actually rent them out to different people as well, and like rent out parts of the deck, or rent out a really cool deck, or you know, buy and sell vanity items too, because some of the cards have different shines to them. They have different qualities, different rarities, and things like that. So I think that this investment just validates that blockchain gaming, crypto-based gaming, is here to stay. I mean, like, just from my perspective, like, I used to be really big into collecting different things, like huge into collecting different trading cards and things like that. And I think a lot of people resonate with that. And I think having a digital version of it hasn't really been possible, because of course a company can create a bunch of cards or whatever, a bunch of collectibles, and basically say, okay, here we go, this is all that's going to exist, blah, blah, blah. But then at the end of the day, if the company goes under or if they shut the game down, you lose that, and you lose the value associated with that. And traditionally, you can't really buy or sell things. There are a few games that let you do this, like Counter-Strike and Dota, but it's still restricted and completely centralized. Whereas with Gods Unchained, the idea is that it's going to be all decentralized. The cards are yours, like provably yours, because they're on the Ethereum blockchain. And you can, you know, trade back and forth with people and sell and buy on numerous secondary markets like OpenSea and Rarebits, which is really cool. So I think this is going to be like the next wave of adoption for crypto. I think that we obviously had DeFi, DAOs are getting up there. Decentralized IDs kind of finding its way in the world right now. I would actually like to see a lot more coming out of that, because I think that's one of the most interesting use cases of blockchains. But yeah, gaming, I think, is just going to be the thing that brings us mainstream, or one of the things that brings us mainstream, just because it's so accessible for different kinds of people. It appeals to young people, and crypto's, you know, generally appeals to young people as well. So I think that over the next few years, it'd be one space to watch in Ethereum.
Yeah, fully agree. What's interesting here is, like, well, I guess stepping back, yeah, I used to be a pretty big gamer back in the day, mainly, I guess, PC and Xbox stuff, and I've kind of lost it over the last few years. But the other thing is, I was, yeah, and to your point, basically because crypto, right? Crypto is like taking over any time that I used to have for gaming outside of my day job. So, and like, I'm a sports fan, so mix crypto, sports, and normal work and ETH Hub, and you'd have no time left pretty much. So that's why I gave it up. But, you know, I still have a passion for it. I still follow it. And back in the day as a kid, I was a big like baseball and hockey card collector. And one of the reasons, like growing up, you would collect them and you would find pretty rare cards that had the potential to be worth something. And the card companies basically just like flooded the market. And now those cards are pretty much worthless because they just, you know, it's like money, right? They just kept printing cards to sell more packs. And there was just no rarity left in the marketplace, and so they kind of killed the value of all the cards. And you know, today pretty much any card I have from back in the day, unless it's super rare, like from, you know, early 90s or whatever, I'm probably dating myself a bit there for some of the listeners, but you know, there's just not much value to them. So this concept in general of Gods Unchained has fascinated me, and it's actually one of the few, I messed with CryptoKitties a little bit back in the day, but it's one of the few games I've actually kind of dedicated some time to in the last, I would say, year or two on Ethereum. And I liked how you didn't really know, like, to your point, you didn't really know that you're on Ethereum. Like, if you buy the packs, yes, the cards are there, which is perfect. But like the gameplay, you know, it doesn't require you to create a transaction to enter a game and then, like, you know, claim your rewards after. Like, there's none of that. It's kind of, the user doesn't know, which I think is essential, right? Because the second you add too much friction into a game, the larger, like, gamer base isn't going to want that at all, right? They want to just, like, fire up their PC or fire up their console and be in a game within, you know, 30 seconds. They don't want this friction. So I had a lot of fun. You know, it was like early beta. I haven't picked it up for probably 2 months. I play with it for a week or two, and I opened some packs and got absolutely destroyed by people that knew what they were doing, and I didn't, because I haven't played like a card game like this in years. I mean, all the way back to like Star Wars cards, basically collecting as a kid. But I think it's going to take off. I mean, it's funny you just said, you know, what's going to be the next big thing. I literally have a tweet in my drafts on my, sometimes I just write them and draft them and save them for later, and it says, like, what's going to be the next wave outside of, you know, DeFi and DAOs? Like, those are clearly taking off. And the reason I didn't send it is because to me, the answer is so obvious, and it is gaming, right? And I feel like people are sleeping on it a little bit, and I'm confused why, but I think I've slowly realized that, like, the gaming side hasn't fully, like, merged into the rest of Ethereum, where, like, DeFi, you know, Ethereum started, at least to me, as programmable money. My background's in finance. I think a lot of people that got interested in Ethereum, you know, or just follow the price, like, that's financial related, they're going to be naturally interested in DeFi. I don't think the gamer crowd really coming over that's just interested in this new concept of, like, provable cards and rarity in cards and these different types of gameplay are necessarily, you know, that interested in Ethereum itself. Like, I'm sure they're slowly getting there, and over time they'll, like, you know, go into all the other aspects of Ethereum. But I think that's why, at least, like, to me, it seems a little bit quieter, even though this might be one of the largest raises that outside of an ICO that any app's done on Ethereum. So it's interesting to me, and it's, like, kind of triggered, you know, I should dive in a bit more and to games outside of Gods Unchained, because it does seem like the new wave. And one funny thing talking here, I actually am hosting a panel at DevCon related to blockchain gaming. So first of all, everybody should come check that out. I think it's on day two around like noon or something like that. But, you know, this is kind of an area I'm going to start scheduling some guests on the podcast and diving in a little bit more here, because I think it's going to be important to get ahead of the wave.
I think maybe one of the reasons why it hasn't taken off as much as other things is because people in crypto don't have much time for games, because we're too busy learning about everything with crypto.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So I guess, like, one other point that I wanted to say was that I kind of imagine a future with these sorts of things where, you know, I think the value prop just people don't understand at the moment. Whereas I think in the future, people will basically, like, I guess kids will, it'll start with kids and maybe teenagers that basically, you know, play these games, and then someone asks them, it's like, oh, you know, how do you know this card is worth this much? And it's like, oh, because, like, it's worth this because it's on Ethereum. It's, and they don't have to explain that it's, like, rare. Do you know what I mean? Like, after you say, oh, because it's on Ethereum and because it's rare, because it's decentralized, blah, 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 it's like trying to explain why, you know, what the benefits of the internet are after you say, oh, I just found it on the internet. Imagine having to explain to someone after you said that, oh, this is what the internet is, this is what it does, this is why it's cool. I think we're going to reach a future point where people can say, oh, because it's on Ethereum or something like that, you know, which kind of comes with justifications that people already know just because, you know, they've grown up with it, or they associate certain properties with Ethereum itself without having it to be explained to them over and over again. So I think that's when we'll get like a breakout moment for a lot of these things, especially gaming, where kids can literally just say, I'll trade you this, you know, this card. And then it's just implied that they can do this and that, you know, it's on Ethereum. You need an Ethereum wallet to do this, or a wallet that interacts with the Ethereum network to do this, just like you need an internet connection to get online, sort of thing. I think that's the way the future is going to go, basically.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. There's going to be this aha moment where I remember as a kid opening up like card packs, and in the back of your head, you're almost just doing it to, yeah, it's fun to collect them and try and get them all, but you're pretty much just doing it so that you can go check like the value of a rare card. And back in the day, I think it's still out there, but I don't know how popular it is, but there were like Beckett's, they were called, where you could check like once a month, you would get them in the mail and you could check like what the value of that card was. Now, kind of ridiculous, because like who was actually trading those for money? Like, probably not really. They were probably just basing it off some random, you know, rarity algorithm. But to be able to like find an item in a game or, you know, open a card and instantly see it on a marketplace where people are live trading this stuff and it have a value that, like you said, you could instantly actually go out and trade it for right away is a huge breakthrough moment in card collecting and games, right? And I think that's really going to, that's definitely, I agree with you, going to be that kind of aha moment of like, why haven't we been doing this, you know, for years in gaming? And that's probably where it's really going to lift off.
Yeah, exactly. It's just breaking down those barriers, I think, is going to be really important. And, you know, getting more people, I guess, clued in on the lingo that we all use so that it's not just like some alien technology to them. All right, next up is a really interesting tweet that I saw this week. It was basically based on the news that came out that an NBA player was tokenizing 50% of his $34 million three-year contract on Ethereum. So Larry Cermak from The Block put out this tweet storm. He's a big basketball fan, so he obviously was really interested in this. But basically, he explained, you know, why this is really cool. So essentially what's happening with this tokenization is that investors in this token will receive monthly payments with interest from this player's contract, and investors will also collect the upside if you know, this player signs a bigger contract later on. In this thread, I suggest going to read the whole thread, but in this thread, Larry basically explains why this is really cool and why, you know, the incentives are actually in check for this sort of stuff and why a token here makes sense and stuff like that. But then also, like a day later, the NBA came out and said that he wasn't allowed to do this. But there was kind of discussion around, well, he's not tokenizing kind of like the NBA contract itself, I don't think. I think he's just tokenizing his income from it. So he's basically allowed to spend his money, you know, in every which way he wants, essentially. But yeah, I'm not... I'm not sure what came of that. I think there might have been a resolution the day after, but yeah, I'm not sure what came of that. But I guess, like, just speaking to a general point here about tokenization and what it can enable, I think it makes sense in a lot of these cases where, you know, tokenizing your contract, right, where people can invest in you and earn returns, is just something that traditionally has been, I mean, it's been possible. You could do this in like the real world without blockchain, whatever, but I think it's just had a lot of friction to it. It didn't really... it wasn't global, that's for sure. It wasn't one of the money Legos. Like, this becomes a money Lego, right? Where this sort of stuff could be traded on Uniswap. You can trade these shares on other decentralized exchanges, and you can do whatever you want with them. You can put them into a CDP theoretically, like if someone voted in as collateral, or you could put them into a set. You could do anything with them, lend it on Compound. I mean, if it made sense to do so, right? I mean, in a lot of cases, it won't make sense to do this, but for this particular token, but for other tokens, it may. And I think we're just seeing like the very, very first proof of concepts of these sorts of things come out now. And I think this is actually an area that's going to explode into the future with everyone tokenizing everything. I still am a big believer that everything will get tokenized eventually, because it just makes a lot more sense to do so. I just think it's going to take a while to get there.
Yeah, like tokenizing yourself for like a right to your own income stream is fascinating. I think we're going to see more of this. So this is a cool story. I'm assuming that the NBA player's name Spencer, I'm assuming that he is some kind of crypto or Ethereum fan. Like, I doubt you kind of wake up and just say, hey, I want to tokenize my contract. So I'm assuming he's been following Ethereum for some time and has this idea. But yeah, it's cool. Like, he's basically making a bond out of his salary, right? So it's interesting. Like, he gets more money up front. So he signed like a 3-year, $34 million contract, and he's tokenizing 40% of it. So essentially, he's going to sell this like as a bond to people. The benefit to him is he's of this $34 million, he's going to get, you know, a good more chunk of it up front, as opposed, you know, just getting like $11 million a year or something. He's going to get a lot more money up front. And then the token holders are going to get paid like interest plus, you know, the principal over time. So, and because, you know, NBA contracts are pretty much 100% guaranteed. The only thing is, like, I think if he gets like arrested or does something really stupid, the team could probably like sue him or just cut his contract void, which that would be really interesting, because like, what's going to happen? So there is a little bit of risk there as a token holder. If that were to happen, like, he's going to probably start defaulting on his payments. But I guess it's just really cool to see a new concept come up, right? We kind of talk about the same use cases and apps over and over, but really this reminds you that the possibilities are endless. And the upside to the investors, I guess, is he has like an opt out after a second year. So if he plays really well and gets like a higher contract, the token holders then have a pretty big upside there. Like if he makes the All-Star game, he's got all these incentives in his contract. So there is more upside, you know, to the token holders than just like a simple bond and, you know, he's paying you. And there's relatively zero risk. So hopefully the NBA, I think it sounds like he's going to fight back a little bit against the NBA. They said no, but I saw a tweet or two from him that made it sound like he's going to fight back and, you know, hopefully he wins or maybe an NFL player. Well, NFLs probably won't happen because they don't have guaranteed contracts, but, you know, like baseball, at least in the US, like baseball, NBA and hockey, like all these are guaranteed contracts. So you could see this start to pop up more in sports. And I side with Larry on this. My two like big geek out passions are crypto and sports. So it's nice to see these two worlds collide.
Yeah, exactly. I actually thought of you as soon as I saw this news during the week, because I know you're big into your sports. But I mean, me personally, big into gaming, not really into sports at all, which is contrast there, I guess. But yeah, I'm still very excited to see this sort of stuff happen and see more of this stuff happen. I'm sure this is it's going to naturally extend to things like esports as well. Like esports is becoming a huge thing, and I feel like that's just a natural step for esports to take, is to merge with crypto and to do something there, because it's just like this similar audiences, you know, young people interested in these sorts of things, you know, maybe more likely to get involved with crypto, and then, you know, it all just flows on from there. All right, last thing I want to talk about was a blog post that you put out this week, Eric. I'm going to let you talk through this, but basically it's called Understanding Ethereum Gas Blocks and the Fee Market. So, you know, we've spoken about gas over the last few weeks on both Twitter and on the podcast, and how, the gas prices are really high because of both Tether and the Fairwind Ponzi game. As of today, gas prices are down to like, I think 1 or 2 Gwei is like the standard price to get your transaction in, which is really cheap. It was stuck at like 20 for the last few weeks and above that. But yeah, I guess this was a timely article to put out. You basically ran through how it all works and, you know, what actually happens in the back end and things like that. But yeah, I'll let you talk through it. And, what did you aim to cover with this blog post?
Yeah, I guess we always joke about, for some odd reason, I really like talking about this stuff. And this was a Medium. I've got a couple like drafts in my Medium. It's kind of like the last thing I get to after, you know, like Gnosis work, obviously, then in my free time, ETHUB, and then the podcast, and then Medium, or then Twitter, and then Medium kind of falls last. So because everyone was talking about gas and, you know, the gas price was up and the gas limit was going up, I decided to just finally wrap up this article. It kind of stemmed from a tweet thread I had put out a year ago that got some love when I was explaining some of these concepts. And, you know, we have a page on ETHUB, obviously, but I just wanted to like, I feel like in Ethereum, a lot of people, almost everybody, and like this is patting our back a little bit, I think one of the things we do pretty well is break down hard information into biteable chunks. At least that's what we try to do on ETHUB and on here and on the newsletter. I feel like even just simple concepts of gas, like people go in these really long explanations and like basically sending you links to the yellow paper, and like it's just too much. So I wanted to try and break down, you know, like I think it's the like 8 or 9 concepts, and in the article I bold like every concept that I think people should understand, and I try to keep it as clean and concise as possible. I just wanted to walk through like, what is gas? How does the EVM and Ethereum use it? How does that build up the transactions? How does that then build up the blocks? And then eventually, like, how does that lead to the fee market, right? So I just kind of walk through, like, what is gas, right? Gas is a unit of measure, basically just completely made up the name in Ethereum, but it measures how much work, like, a machine has to do to execute your transaction, right? And then you have to pay a gas price per unit of gas that your transaction, you know, is going to do. And then if you multiply those two together, that's your transaction cost. You know, I feel like a lot of people, that's one of the more basic concepts of Ethereum. It's just not that well explained. And then obviously each transaction is taking up their gas, you know, that builds up into a block, right? So a block can only execute so much gas. That's called the gas limit. Now, why do we have the gas limit on a block? Well, because we don't want state size or block size or uncle rate to get too high. So I walk through kind of what those are and then just explain, you know, miners have control of the block gas limit, have recently raised it, kind of go into a little bit around that. And then finally, like probably the most important thing is the fee market. So how does this all, you know, lead to what we have to do when we send a transaction, which is specify like a gas price and fight against others to get into blocks. And kind of walk there, obviously, because we have a cap on the gas limit per block that creates a cap on, you know, supply essentially. So, you know, if demand's fluctuating or demand's outpacing the supply, you're going to get, you know, a market. And that's when people start to bid up the gas price. So obviously we saw the gas price, gosh, at some points, I think I saw the average gas price in blocks as high as 80, 90 Gwei. That's obviously highly inefficient. And one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of EIP-1559 is we obviously didn't have 80 times the demand for gas, you know, one week after another. It's just because the how we do the auction mechanism on gas price is so inefficient. Like, you don't know what your neighbor is going to pay, right? So you just really overpay, sometimes as much as like 90, 99%. EIP-1559 will help that. But yeah, and then just kind of walked in some recent trends about what we've been seeing. But I'm hoping that, like, when people just Google, I like Medium posts because they go pretty far and they actually get pretty high up on SEO on Google, like near the top of the page for kind of what you write about. So my real goal for this was, if someone Googles, you know, what is gas on Ethereum or what is the block gas limit, and this is just what they run across and they can hopefully, you know, easily consume it as opposed to a lot of the other stuff that I saw out there.
Yeah, it was a great piece. I do suggest everyone go and read it. It explains things quite well. And yeah, as you said, gas is one of the most misunderstood things in Ethereum, I think, even though it, you know, everyone kind of sees it, especially like anytime you want to do a transaction, you're going to see the thing that says gas fee there. You know, gas estimations for wallets are pretty bad as well. So that's why I'm bullish on EIP-1559. We just need a better way to treat the gas market, essentially. All right, that's it for this week, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Just a reminder, yeah, next week there won't be a weekly recap podcast or a guest episode because of DevCon, but we will be back the week after that with a full recap of DevCon and everything that we did there. If you haven't subscribed yet, go to ethub.substack.com and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks for listening to Into the Ether. You can subscribe to the podcast and newsletter at ethub.substack.com, find our website at ethub.io, and follow us on Twitter at econoar and @sassel0x.